Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, Answers for Healing and Infinite Love. My new book, which shares insights, stories, and methods for overcoming our traumas, fears, and restrictions, and for achieving our natural divine soul right, which is to live a healthy and joyful life experience, ultimately reaching our full human potential for love. Today, I am delighted to welcome Tom North, author of True North, which is his story of being one of the 8 North children who, together with the 10 Beardsley children, became the family which was featured in the 1968 film Yours, Mine, and Ours, starring Lucille Ball and Henry Fonda. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Cheryl.
Welcome. And, you know, the other day I was speaking to a young woman and mentioned that you were going to be a guest on the show, and she got so excited. She said she had watched the movie so many times and enjoyed it. She was quite a young girl also, and this movie was done a while ago. So people are still seeing that film. Tom, you know, as listeners of Healing From Within are aware, each show offers insights and views expressing the dual nature of life, our inner soul awareness, and the reality of the physical world, and how this awareness of self, our inner self, encourages us to know more about ourselves, our fears, our traumas, and to discover ways to overcome any situation, always moving forward towards mastering our emotions, life challenges, understanding cause and effect, and learning to interact with others in a healthy and loving way. In today's episode of Healing From Within, Tom will share his story of how what appeared to be one of the biggest and happiest families around, as the movie depicted, was anything but that. Tom will share intimate details of his stepfather's violence and abuse, which created a life of intimidation, fear, and depression for the North children, and I'm sure for his own children too, and how Tom traveled on a journey of self-discovery, survival, and healing as he reclaimed his own identity and self-esteem. We know things are not always as they appear, and on many shows for Healing From Within, we have addressed the need for responsibility by medical practitioners, teachers, family, friends, to intervene and help those who are being hurt by violent or abusive people. In an evolving society, we must assume responsibility to speak up about injustice and criminal activity in order to help those who may not be able to help themselves. Tom, you know, I often ask my guests how their childhood may reflect the values, work, and pursuits they followed as adults, as the seeds of our destiny are often visible in our earliest challenges. Can you tell us something of your earlier interest and the people in your life, and how, in actuality, what was difficult led you to the person you are now?
Wow, what a wonderful place to start. That's great, Cheryl. Yes, so the backstory for your listeners is that in 1961, my mother, Helen North, had 8 children, and she married. After my father was killed, he was a Navy aviator, and he was killed in a training exercise, flying an experimental jet aircraft. And 15 months after he died, my mother married a man, Frank Beardsley, who had 10 children. So we know that 8 and 10 is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's what they did. And so the story was carried as a human interest story in the media of the day. Lucille Ball saw the story in the newspapers, and she called my mother and stepfather, and she said, I want to make a movie about the combination of these two big families. And so she did. And she came to Carmel, California, where we were living, and she met my mother and stepfather and all the children. And shortly after meeting my mother and stepfather, she took my mother aside and she said, you keep that man away from me. But she was also an excellent judge of people. She actually could read energy, and she was extremely smart. And when I was in her presence, I got the distinct sense of someone who was very, very alert to her surroundings and knew what was going on around her. Very bright woman. So she made the film. It came out in 1968, as you said a moment ago, and it was the fourth highest grossing film of that year. And Lucille Ball won a Golden Globe for her portrayal as Helen North Beardsley. So it was a success both on the box office and critically, and I just wish that the film story was the real one.
But Tom, you wrote something I'd like to read now, and it's so typical of a sensitive spiritual child, which you were, one who still almost remembers home or the eternal soul life. Can I read what you wrote?
Please.
You wrote, "Our home was two blocks from Pen Cove Beach, and I was drawn to explore the beach's natural treasures as if each was a nugget of pure gold. Clams, oysters, prawns, and crabs abounded. Every discovery I made was a moment of wonder. It was on these walks at the seashore that I remember having reveries, indulging in the excitement of just being alive. I believe we all have this sense of magic of life itself when we are children." And, you know, I want to say that is true, and I have felt exactly that way. In my book, The Living Spirit, I share my discoveries as a Reiki energy healer and medium, and of connecting to this higher field of information, love, and eternal source that is all around us and within us, and which is the truth, the reality of what you felt and I felt when we were children. It is this connection to energy and creation that is our birthright, and also it is our destiny to remember and appreciate our uniqueness as spiritual and also physical beings.
So that, thank you for sharing that, because whenever I remember that, I can place myself in that exact experience, and it does connect me to that source that is light.
Now, how do you remember your father, Dick North? You were very young. And how do you remember your stepfather, Frank Beardsley? It's like they were night and day.
Yes, they were night and day. You know, my father, Dick North, was a man of tremendous humor and a tremendous love. I remember when he would come home from work, he would get down on the floor and play with the children. And, you know, he didn't make the kids come up to his level. He got down on their level. And so we would play. He just became a child with the rest of us. And we would laugh, and our household was characterized by lots of hugging and kissing and laughter. And it was a tremendous amount of love and light in the house. So when he died and my mother married Frank Beardsley, we went 180 degrees in the other direction, because Frank Beardsley was psychotic. But when my mother met his children, she told me herself, she said that she met 10 children who lived in terror for their lives. And she was afraid he was going to kill them, which is why she married him, because she wanted to save his children from him and then save him from himself.
But you wrote about Frank Beardsley. Being in the dining room or any other room with Frank Beardsley was like sitting next to a roadside bomb, an incendiary device that could go off at any time. Time after time, my aunt and uncles tried to point out to my mother the danger she was exposing her children to. And Mom would protest through insisting that bringing some degree of love and security into the Beardsley children was more important. So there it is. It was her desire and her maybe it was her destiny to be there for those children and offer them some support to help them all get through, to the best of their ability, the life that they were all living. Now, you talk about the challenge of raising 20 children, because there were two more, weren't there?
Actually, there were 18 and then two more, so it did total 20 children.
Yeah, so you also said something that you felt it was your belief that it was kind of almost impossible and unnatural to sustain a really good quality of life for that many children. And, you know, they don't give a course on how to be a parent, even now. There are some courses in taking care of infants, and it's a lot of work, it's a lot of effort, and a lot of resources. And people who are not really prepared to do it probably shouldn't undertake the responsibility, but almost everybody thinks it's not a big deal.
Right.
And it is a very big deal.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Tom, I want to ask you an important question.
Sure.
In reference to this being a big deal. Where were the medical people and the teachers and the religious people who dealt with your family? How did they not see the problems you were all experiencing, and why did no one step in to intervene and offer psychological counseling to your parents?
You know, Cheryl, you mentioned a moment ago that was a time, it was after World War II, it was after the Korean War, and it was the time of, the suburban American dream.
Mm-hmm.
And it was characterized by television sitcoms like I Love Lucy and Ozzie and Harriet and Leave It to Beaver. And these were the idealized American dream scenarios that were being played in the popular media. But what happened in our situation is that tendency to be in denial about what was actually going on in many American homes was overemphasized in our situation. And when on one particular harrowing experience with Frank Beardsley, two of my sisters and I went up to the local church to get help because we just couldn't see this going on and on and on. It was crazy. And so I told the priest what was going on in our house, and he looked at me and he said, Tommy, he said, I want you to go home and apologize to your father. And I said, he's not my father. And he looked down at me very condescendingly, and he said, of course he is. He said, now I also want you to come to confession on Saturday morning, young man, and confess these sins of calumny. And calumny is the sin of saying something bad about a person who's in a position of authority.
And it wasn't only you. Many children have come forward. It's still happening now. I've interviewed many people, children of child abuse and sexual abuse, who went for help, and it was overlooked. I myself, as a teacher, became aware of one of my students in a special need class, this is years ago, and realized that he was being abused by his father. And I went to the assistant principal, and I was told that was something to be handled by the social workers, and I sort of wasn't to get involved. And I said, I have to report this, and I did, because the job was not as important to me as doing the right thing for that child. And I did report it to the social worker, and the father was no longer allowed to see him unsupervised. And this is the point. It's still going on. There were still many, many homes. And your sisters were also sexually abused by him, weren't they?
That's correct. There wasn't a girl in the family who, as she approached puberty, was not sexually abused by him.
All right, so we're dealing with a lot of problems that went on there, and I commend you for looking for help when you did. And I still suggest to everyone out there listening, if you are in a situation, there will be someone to help you. If the first one doesn't respond, like when you went to the priest and they didn't respond, and they didn't in those days, everybody went into denial. They said, oh, what goes on in the home and the family is for them to deal with. And that's no longer the truth. And things are very different, thank goodness for that. So I suggest if one person will not listen, you find another adult, and one will listen, and one will help you. So we'll go on to there. you tell of a first grade teacher who came to visit you after you moved and after your mother remarried, and she could see how withdrawn and reserved and frightened you were. She told you because she wanted you to remember something that you had seemed to forget at that time, that you were the smartest pupil in her class. So how'd you feel when she said that to you?
You know, I remember it like it was yesterday, and I felt embarrassed, and I felt a tremendous sense of guilt and shame because my life had changed so dramatically. You know, children at that age tend to see themselves as the center of the universe. And if something happens in their lives, they tend to think it's their own fault.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so I thought, you know, I must have done something wrong if all of these bad things are happening. And so I told her, you know, I had already been in that household for over a year, and the trauma was building so dramatically that I said, no, you're wrong, I'm stupid. And my stepfather tells me all the time how stupid I am. And, you know, who's more likely to be right, him or you? So obviously you're wrong.
You were being brainwashed. You were losing track of who you really were, even when you were being reminded. Now, Tom, you wrote this, that your luck wasn't much better at school than at home, as you attended a typical Catholic parochial school, heavy on religion, heavy on discipline, and short on practicing the humanitarian standards of gentleness and kindness that are now becoming so much a part of the spiritual evolution. Now, after the Mayan prophecy of 2012, which predicted great change and enlightenment and changing philosophy about child rearing and the rights of each individual, including children, to talk up. If there is abuse or corporal punishment, there are many social agencies that will investigate domestic abuse, sexual abuse, childhood trauma, and any other kind of abuse, and agencies, therapists, and organizations to help challenged people.
Yeah.
Now, that is a very important point in your book, that these things went on, they go on, but now we are evolving as a humanity and civilized people, conscious people. And thank goodness people who had experiences are coming forward and are so articulate about explaining how they lived through it, what happened, so that they can help bring about changes, which are happening and will happen more and more. Now,
you know, that's an interesting point you raise, Cheryl, because only lest your listeners think that, you know, the book is just one story of difficulty after another. About two-thirds of the book is focused on how I recovered from a childhood of domestic violence and child abuse.
Well, we're going to get to that because, Tom, you write that in nature, fishing, hunting, and finding a few good men as role models, you were helped, as was your brother Nick, to develop some great values. And that led you into a whole other area of transcendental meditation and to be with people who were learning the benefits of practices like that to help them develop their inner state of higher consciousness. So you want to tell us something about how being in nature and that whole area of seeing a different part of the world and yourself was a wonderful experience?
Yes, you know, it's interesting. There's a biological aspect to that, and that is that the human brain operates at between 6 and 10 cycles per second, with an average of about 7.4 cycles per second. And that's actually what all of nature vibrates at about 7.4, they call them hertz per second. So when we go out to the beach, we go to the lake or into a forest, we're actually slowing our brains down. We're attuning ourselves to the natural environment around us, and that's very healing. It's very stabilizing and normalizing. Because our urban and artificial environments that we create tend to be much more fast-paced, and they vibrate at a much higher level. So by going out into nature, I was healing myself. I was plugging into a slower vibratory level, And that's a very powerful influence.
And tell us something about transcendental meditation and how this opened new areas of forgiveness and hope for you and the many benefits that come about to people who do find a way to slow down, appreciate nature, perhaps meditate or pray, whichever. It all brings you into a state of silence and peace so that you can access your inner wisdom and your destiny and your plans and what you hope to do in the world, regardless of what's happening around you or to you. So can you tell us something about that?
Sure. Thank you for bringing that up, Cheryl, because that's probably the most important thing we could talk about. You know, on a daily basis, as we go through our days, we accumulate a little bit of tiredness, some fatigue, and so we go to sleep at night to release some of that. Well, as we live our lives, some of those daily stresses that we experience are more intense. And so they leave a deeper impression on our physiology, on our emotions, on our mental state. And as those stresses intensify, like for people who go to war and experience horrific things like so many of us did as children, those stresses embed themselves in our bodies. And the value of practices like transcendental meditation is that it helps us to release those deep-seated stresses that are not relieved by normal rest that we get from sleeping. So transcendental meditation has been proven by thousands of scientific studies to release deep-rooted stresses in the physiology. And as we release those deep-rooted stresses in the physiology, we express more of our own natural creativity, which has been bound up by that PTSD process, that very deep traumatic stress process. So transcendental meditation, it gives us access to that deep silence within ourselves, and automatically, when we access that deep silence, we release those stresses, and we expand our awareness. So the benefits are on more levels than we actually have time to talk about, but it's a very, very powerful healing and expansive modality.
Well, actually, you know, the body reacts and expresses what the mind thinks. And the traumas, if we worry about certain things over and over, if we worry these things will happen, they eventually will happen. We are projecting our reality through our thoughts and intentions, and also at the cellular level, we are retaining trauma. So, yes, we want to release it. And there are many energy healing modalities. Reiki that I do is one of them, and transcendental meditation, and many other types of counseling where we can help relax the body and let go of these imprinted stresses, fears, and limitations so that we can access another part of ourselves, the higher part of ourselves. Now, you actually wrote some things that were really good here. You said there is an increased tendency to let things happen rather than make them happen. So we can find ourselves, if we allow ourselves to relax, have frequent attacks of smiling, feelings of being connected to others and nature, frequent overwhelming episodes of appreciation, a tendency to think and act spontaneously rather than from fears based on past experiences, and we can have an unmistakable ability to enjoy each moment. A loss of ability to worry, a loss of interest in conflict, a loss of interest in interrupting the actions of others, a loss of interest in judging others, and a loss of interest in judging ourselves. So we have a truer sense of well-being. Those are all wonderful benefits to all the studies that you have done and all the people you have interacted with in these ways to find your true inner self by releasing all negativity. And we all have negativity from our childhood. And even if you're not living in a family with 20 children with a lot of different problems, every family is dysfunctional on some level. So there are benefits to meditation and all the other ways that we find peace and rest and relaxation from fear. So you describe a very important experience. You say while in deep meditation, you became aware of a light that emanated from a single point. And to me, it sounded like many people have been on my show who have described a near-death experience. Can you tell us of that moment?
Well, that's so interesting, Cheryl, because it was like a near-death experience, but it happened during a meditation. And so I was actually traveling to the other side. I actually saw a point of light. It expanded to fill my entire awareness, and I went towards that point and went through a tunnel, just like people describe who have had a near-death experience, and I came out into this very blissful, light-filled environment, and I was drawn towards what I can only describe, because we really don't have the vocabulary in our English language to describe this, but I was drawn to a source of divine love. And as I reached that source of divine love, I wanted to merge into it and never be apart from that divinity, that pure love. And as I got to it, it was like there was a glass wall. And beyond that point, I couldn't go. And a voice within me said, you have to go back. You can't merge now. You have to go back. And I was very disappointed in that response. And because I was told I had to go back, it was like the divine parent was saying no to me. And so I localized back into my body immediately. And what I thought had been a 20-minute meditation had actually been 4 hours. I had been sitting there in this bliss for 4 hours. The irony is that for the next 3 or 4 days, I walked around in a terrible state of depression because I felt that I had been rejected by the ultimate parent. And so there's a bit of a cosmic humor in all of that. But at the time, it wasn't humorous at all. So I sort of experienced extremes on both ends.
As a medium, I accessed that place where you were, and it is so beautiful and so light and so peaceful and loving that it is hard to leave. But it wasn't your time, and it is a wonderful experience that you have. And I'm always very grateful that I didn't have to have a near-death experience to know that place, and you didn't have to either. So we're very fortunate to know what we know and have felt and experienced that beautiful in between two worlds. Let's say we had our feet in two worlds. In relation to what we're talking about here, I suggest in a message that I downloaded in a dream from that place of light and source that you just described, a poem or prayer that simply says, remember your essence, your home beyond this earth and physical life, the people and places you will observe, and know you are never alone as you are guided and loved by the higher beings of eternal life as you gather a greater awareness of self and spirit here on earth, eventually returning to that beginning where we may remember you and me as one together in unity and love for all time in life and, yes, in death. I want to thank you, Tom North, for your creative talents and search from pain to joy and a sense of the infinite potential for each soul being. And you are, for me, the living proof that one can discover the true nature of life and love, no matter what the traumas of their early childhood experiences are. To purchase this memoir and journey of self-discovery, go to TrueNorthByTomNorth.com. In summarizing today's episode of Healing From Within, we have shared quite unusual family history of the North Beardsley family, and one that emphasizes that things are not always as they appear. In an evolving society of compassionate citizens and communities that seek to serve the common good, we must be vigilant, courageous, and forthright, and offer and secure the help needed when we become aware of any child abuse, battered wife, or husband syndrome, and speak up where people are verbally, physically, sexually, or emotionally damaged. If we cannot do it alone, we must seek others who will work in unison for honoring the universal laws of energy, which, when followed, afford a better quality of life and engender the more sensitive and compassionate sparks of our divine soul nature, enriching all people collectively, leading to a more refined and evolved humanity. As we might say, it is the way and will continue to be the means for us to find individual peace, joy, and well-being. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and I invite you to visit my website, CherylGlick.com, DreamVision7Radio.net, and WebTalkRadio.com to listen to authors and visionaries who share their experiences that show us the greatest possibilities for realizing our deepest needs and using our full potential to improve both personally and universally. Thank you.